evening, everybody.
It talks about everything.
Welcome to our work session of this 26th day of August 2019. Glad to have all visitors here, folks that have opinions and stakes in the Polaris building, a building we've talked about for years. And I hope for a really good update tonight. I'll have the clerk call the roll.
Ms. Otterston?
Here.
Mr. Cleworth is not excused this evening, but will not be present. Ms. Rogers?
Here.
Ms. Kuhn? Mr. Pruse?
Here.
Ms. Therian is excused. Mayor Matherly?
Here. All right, I'm gonna get out of the way of the screen, hand things over to David to start the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. City Council, we're here to give yourselves and the City of Fairbanks an update from the Polaris Group on exactly where we're at with the Polaris building and how detailed we are getting. I have giving report tonight. We're going to start out with Andrew Ackerman from the City of Fairbanks Engineering Department. Then we'll go to Helen Renfrew. Then we'll go to either one of these two. And then, yeah. But we also have Jess with the Fairbanks Arts Association here too, and want to get a little bit of input from her because they are also involved in this. We have in front of you a resolution. We will be altering this resolution a little bit, but we will go over that later. We're going to, and I will detail that. Paul took the one that we did and made it much nicer, but we want to make it exactly perfect for what we're doing. So with that, the first part of the presentation will be about the Brownsfield funds we're looking for, which is what this precipitates. Mr. Ackerman.
Thank you. So I guess I'll start by giving a little bit of a background on how we got here and then dive right into the program or the particular EPA grant fund that we are targeting. So we were looking at, after in June of 2018, we had a brownfield hazardous assessment or hazardous material site assessment done for the Polaris building. We were able to get a grant through the DEC assessment program in 2018 to have that work completed. And essentially what that did was assess the building itself for hazardous materials, and we were able to get a real concrete idea of the cost of doing cleanup of the building itself. What we were not able to do there was do a full assessment of the property itself. And at the time, if you recall, we did not have fee title ownership of the property. But since then, in 2018, we were able to get, the city was able to take ownership of the property. At that point, that opened up some new doors for us to go after EPA competitive brownfield grants. And when I say that, it opened up assessment and cleanup grant funds. So after some discussions with the work group, our partners, as well as talking to the technical assistance experts, EPA funds different technical assistance programs throughout the nation. We've been working with one. There's an individual, Ignacio Darit, who's out of California, who specializes in Alaska. He advised us to look at the multipurpose grant, and that is a grant that is specifically intended for municipalities that have ownership of at least one of the sites that they plan on doing cleanup and reuse and redevelopment of that property. The multipurpose grant is also good for us in that it has an $800,000 potential grant amount, and it allows us to address multiple sites. It also allows us to do multiple activities at the site, because we have, as I mentioned, done the assessment of the building, but we have not assessed, for example, soil contamination. So we would need to do that. So we've done some of the phase one assessment, but we need to do a full complete phase two. We actually probably should create a phase one, doing some additional research as well. But phase one, phase two, the multipurpose grant allows us to do a full inventory. We can prioritize sites that we think are best for redevelopment. We need to do some community involvement activities. Of course, I mentioned the site assessments. And then develop a cleanup plan and reuse plan for the brownfield sites. The multipurpose grant does require a cost share of $40,000. But when we thought about the return of potentially $800,000, that seems pretty good.
A couple things. The cost share would be not with the City of Fairbanks writing a $40,000 check. It would be through their efforts and cost of what they are paid through the city as a functioning city engineer on this project. Also, on the multiple sites, there's six legal descriptions that the City of Fairbanks owns on that block. So that is what makes the multiple sites on this. So the Polaris building is on five sites. The vacant lot where the Pioneer Hotel used to be is one site. Therefore, this fits perfectly in that envelope.
Exactly, yeah. I guess another point is that we could use this money even if we went across Noble Street to additional properties that are not under ownership right now, but if we wanted to partner with other property owners on a reuse project, we could use this money to do assessment or cleanup on other sites. The cleanup is such a large expense. This particular grant will not cover the entirety of that, but it will get the ball further down the road, and that's really what our objective is to move forward, make progress in getting the building down so that it can be reused. Now, the ordinance that's being presented tonight...
Resolution.
Thank you. It is one of the criteria. We do not have, absent a reuse plan, the EPA does state that a resolution from the property owner, from the city, meets the criteria of having, in the absence of a full reuse plan, having a reuse plan. But it will benefit us in the future if we actually, after we've done some public involvement, to have a more concrete reuse plan. And that is what is next on the agenda. So that ties in nicely.
Ellen.
Okay.
Jess, are you going to want to come up here and take Andrew's seat for a bit?
Sure.
David.
Yes.
Quick question.
Yeah.
I understand the $800,000 isn't going to cover the cleanup. What is the anticipated cleanup cost? I understand right now it's such a toxic site that getting in it to really know.
I think one estimate was $2.3 million.
Okay.
Oh, no.
Is that low?
That's low.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
estimate was only $2.3 million.
I hesitate to say this because there are many variables involved, but if we just look at the estimated cost of bringing the building down and disposing of the parts that are hazardous.
Which is most of it, but the outside.
Yes, right, because it's integrated with asbestos throughout. We're talking close to $10 million, 10 to $11 million.
So this is a nice start, but with a far horizon on the other side. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Andrew? Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Ellen?
Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to update you on the ongoing Fairbanks Convention and Arts Center project. I'm Helen Renfrew. I'm the Director of Meetings and Conventions at Explore Fairbanks, and we have visual aids. So we'll go into background, just a little bit of background. We are condensing 35 years worth of background into two slides, so please bear with me. We found a memo, actually I think it was Jeff Jacobson, who found a memo from 1984, 35 years ago, from the then executive director of the Fairbanks Convention and Visitors Bureau, documenting the need for a meeting facility in downtown Fairbanks. Specific to the Polaris building, it became vacant in 2002 and was condemned in 2012. So that building has been vacant for 17 years. In 2012, Convention Sports and Leisure, which is a consulting firm that Fairbanks Convention and Visitors Bureau at the time, Explore Fairbanks now, hired, released a report establishing market demand. So when we're talking about building a potential convention center, our stakeholders were saying, okay, but would it get enough use? Can we really use a convention center? And the CSL report documented that. But then that moved the needle. And so the question now became not who will it be used, but who specifically will use it? Because of a confidentiality clause, CSL could not give us the names of those organizations. So then we commissioned the Incremental Meeting Market Business Demand Study, and it qualified meeting business. This study answered the who will use it question, at which point it became how much is this going to cost us to build? So we move on beyond the who will use it. Oh, some of the parameters we had on that particular study. The contractor had to look only at meetings of 500 or more attendees, so large enough so that we couldn't handle it with our current infrastructure. They had to be meetings that rotated, so it would come business that could potentially come back. And it also needed to be based on topics that had some sort of an affiliation with Fairbanks in the interior of Alaska. They were ones that didn't have a high investment in them. There are meetings out there now where you have to commit to raising $50,000 before they'll look at your community, and we didn't want to take those into consideration. In 2015, the Polaris work group formed with a focus of the Polaris building and the Polaris site itself. In 2016, the city of Fairbanks purchased the first option purchased an option on the first note for that building. In 2017, Explore Fairbanks hired Johnson Consulting to answer the how much will it cost to build and operate questions. We convened a meeting in April of potential funding sources, so there were 20 plus reps of foundations and state and federal agencies, including HUD, USDA, and AHFC, which were the housing component portions of those groups. There was the Brownfield study that Andrew referenced, which identified contaminants of lead, mercury, asbestos, PCBs, and mold on every floor of that building. In May of 2018, the borough acquired the building through tax foreclosure. In June, the work group raised $36,332.67 from 17 private sector businesses, 2 nonprofit organizations, and 13 individuals. We turned that money over to the city and to help them secure the building, and the city received title on June 27th of 2018. The steering committee for the CPAC group revised the program. The buildings and projects were larger, and we resized them with the goal to decrease capital expenses as well as operating expenses. And then the Johnson Consulting issued their final report in April of this year. So the next couple slides deal specifically with the convention center part of this project. This chart is showing the demand season for meetings. And this is accurate not just nationally, but also specifically for the state of Alaska. Demand is highest in the fall and in the spring, and lowest in the summer months. Quite often, those summertime meetings are the ones driven by an academic or research calendar. In Fairbanks specifically, this is a chart of our average hotel occupancy by month. Hotels are most full in the summer and in March, thanks to Northern Lights and winter tourism development, with lower occupancies in the spring and fall. I'm sure this doesn't surprise anyone, that meeting demand matches up rather nicely with our hotels, Fairbanks Hotel's occupancy. The meeting attendees can help to straighten out this occupancy curve because they need hotel rooms mostly during the times when we have hotel rooms available. A couple of definitions. CSL defined a convention center as a facility with ballroom and multipurpose space as an important characteristic that event planners review. The development of dedicated, state-of-the-art ballroom and multipurpose space has taken place in many recently built centers, while older centers don't offer such space. The pictures on this slide, on the left is the boardroom at the Denina Center, and on the right is the ballroom at the Denina Center. The Carlson Center, on the other hand, is a community or civic center. Its actual name is the Carlson, John A. Carlson Community Activity Center. The Carlson Center is a sports and entertainment event-oriented facility offering plenary seating. Its primary use comes from spectator events such as sporting events, concerts, and family shows. However, it importantly lacks one or more qualified hotel properties attached, adjacent, or within close proximity, as well as lacking in high-finished spaces and plentiful breakout meeting spaces. The picture on the top there is AFN, which is a conference that has majority of it is general session and doesn't require as much breakout space, which is the only reason why we can make it work in the Carlson Center. And on the bottom is a flat floor trade show. So in those studies, we looked at multiple sites. Five were actually identified in the CSL study. Two of them were taken out of consideration right away. The Vision Fairbanks plan it required a hotel to be built, and that was not going to work. And near the Carlson Center also required additional construction and potentially a hotel, but we found out that because of the fact that that space used to be a landfill, the Carlson Center itself is built on the only economically viable constructible land there. CSL identified multiple locations for a potential convention center, mainly focused around where hotel rooms are, so by the airport, Princess and Pikes, near Wedgwood Resort, and Candlewood, Hampton, and Holiday Inn Express up there on the north side of town, as well as near the Westmark. The Polaris building location was identified the entire time as the opportune place for a performing arts center. And CSL suggested that co-locating the facilities downtown was the right way to go if it seemed like the best way to move the project forward. So just as frame of reference, the Polaris building is outlined in red there. You get a bird's eye view. And if any of you have fond memories of the Tiki Cove, I'm afraid we're going to ruin those.
These photos were taken about a decade ago.
Wow. Yeah, it's considerably worse now.
Actually.
Yeah, so, ew. These are the blocks that...
Could you go back? I want to show you something. Back one more, back one more, back one more. Those are trees grown on top of the Polaris building. They removed them 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and they're growing back now.
Yeah.
Thank you, Helen. I always like to see trees on top of buildings.
Me too.
It's not just a few trees. It's a grove.
So these are the blocks that were considered in the Johnson Consulting Report. Block 12 is the Polaris building block, and block 11 is the block directly to the east across Noble. At the conclusion of the Johnson study, the program components in the PAC included a 750-seat theater with 250 of them closest to the stage, removable for maximum setup flexibility, a lobby that faced downtown along Lacey, a connecting corridor along 2nd Avenue. The program components for the convention center were a 30,000 square foot multipurpose hall, carpeted and subdividable, 10,000 square feet of meeting rooms on two levels, also subdividable, ample pre-function space, and the building being oriented on 2nd Avenue. That agreed program came in at about $171 million, resulted in a 150,000 gross square foot building The costs associated for this program were segregated into those following eight specific categories for this estimate, and they do not include any debt service or financing costs. No land acquisition costs associated with the Polaris site, providing more than 300 new parking spaces, or any costs incurred prior to the completion of the study. They also didn't include a trap floor, UV film on the connector and pack lobby in order to protect any art that might be displayed there, a connector bridge over Noble Street to connect the Convention Center program to the Art Center, and it did not include any construction that would need to take place in the building in order for potential future expansion upwards. So this slide shows the potential future construction of a sky bridge between the buildings and a third floor junior ballroom. This chart shows the sizes of the net operating losses in year one of the convention center, years 1, 5, and 10. One large increased expense as the years progress is the reserve for replacement line. As the building gets older, more and more money is put away for repairs and reserves. So it's so we would be managing maintenance costs. And this chart shows you the operating deficit for the Performing Arts Center in years 1, 5, and 10. You can see the increase in reserves in this chart as well. And this shows you, it highlights why public facilities such as convention centers are built. The economic impact of this facility for the community far outweighs the operating deficit. Direct impacts of about $8 million in the first year, growing to $22 million by year 10. And that's direct spending. And then when you add the multipliers for indirect and induced, you can see that grows to $11.7 million and $33 million. This chart also shows the increased jobs in Fairbanks specifically related to the economic impact of the center, and it shows impacts on taxes. The economic impact for the Performing Arts Center, although smaller, the PAC would also be expected to have a positive overall impact in addition to the increased quality of life for local residents. This chart shows bed tax and potential bed tax increases. The orange bars show historical levels of bed tax collection combined, city, Fairbanks, North Star Borough, and North Pole. Based on the historical average annual growth, the dark blue bars show the expected increase in collection at the current 8% rate. The light blue bars show the incremental increase if the bed tax across the city and borough were to be raised to 12%. And this table shows that the incremental increase in bed tax could offset the deficit of the convention center portion of the project. But as a reminder, those costs do not include any debt service or finance-related costs, land acquisition costs for the Polaris site, more than 300 parking spaces, or any items determined needed by the next study. They also don't include the trap floor, although this is less likely needed in the reimagined art center, UV film, connector bridge, or any plans for vertical expansion. So, in conclusion, after three studies, we have found these things to be conclusive. There is a strong market demand for conferences in the Fairbanks area. A Fairbanks Convention Center is a significantly positive impact on the economy of the region. An art center enhances the quality of life of residents, and a co-located convention and art center is a revitalization tool for downtown Fairbanks. The next steps. We still need to reconfigure the Arts Center program arrangement. The group is shifting away from a performing arts center concept and more towards a community arts center concept. That makes incorporating potential housing more feasible. The Polaris building needs to be demolished. And any plan for the convention and arts center future must include capital funding and operation decisions and outcomes. So this last slide is a bit of baklava. So convention center, so this is potential funding opportunities based on the different components of a multi-use project. So the convention center is connected to the arts center based on the potential for shared space that could functionally serve as a banquet room to support the meeting and multi-purpose space in the convention center. And you can see that different types of funding are feasible based on which type, which component of the multi-use project you're talking about. Additional potential funding sources that were raised both at the meeting in April of 2017 as well as in the studies that have been commissioned are included on the upper right of this slide. So there's a place for everyone as we layer together funding. And at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Nadine.
Thank you.
Are there any questions? Are there any questions for Helen?
Not yet. There will be.
Don't go far.
I do.
A million miles an hour. Yeah. Nadine, would you?
I just want to say thanks for the opportunity. I'm Nadine Winters. I'm the executive director of Fairbanks Neighborhood Housing. Renee Staley is one of our board members, as is Catherine Dodge. I just want to give you a little context what Fairbanks Neighborhood Housing is. I think you know all of us, but maybe not so much our organization. We've been around since 93, 25, 26 years, least known nonprofit in town. We're an affiliate of NeighborWorks America, which is a national housing, affordable housing organization. NeighborWorks America is, we're one of the 240 affiliates. NeighborWorks America is a mission-driven organization, cares deeply about affordable housing and community development. That's what they do. They hold us to really high standards in terms of governance. They provide training opportunities, and they also a source of funding. Fairbanks Neighborhood Housing, we do basically safe, affordable housing two ways. We do down payment closing cost assistance loans. We do home improvement loans, and we own affordable rental properties, all of which are in South Fairbanks. That is by design, not a requirement. We can basically develop wherever we want. Affordable rental units, I think there's people get confused a bit about affordable and market. Basically, affordable rental means that whoever helps you fund the construction of the property gets to tell you what to do with the rent and the tenants, essentially. So of our properties on South Fairbanks, some of them are we can only rent to people at 50% area median income, adjusted for family size. Some of them are if you're just senior or have a disability and also have income requirements. But just in that housing context, as we all talk about partnering and going into the future, all funding sources come with criteria and contingencies. So we also manage a property that's very low income, and then we also own properties that are for seniors and elderly and people with disabilities and that are handicapped accessible. For our closing costs and down payment, we currently have three programs. Amazingly enough, if anyone knows anyone buying a house, three programs, two of which can be turned into grants. It's either, again, area median income, either 80%, 100%, or 120%. And like, for instance, the LIFT program that Wells Fargo just rolled out, there's $3 million in that program, and you could get $10,000 as a grant just to get into a home. You don't even have to be a first-time home buyer, and you just have to own or occupy for 5 years, and then you have $10,000 worth of equity. So people looking for houses right now, I know it's a complicated market, but there's a number of programs that can help people anywhere from 80% of area median income up to 120% of area median income. And just an FYI, area median income in Fairbanks right now, surprisingly, is at $92,400. I want to know those people that are spiking that up. Fairbanks Neighborhood Housing, we actually own some land, and unusual for a nonprofit, we actually have a little bit of cash. But what our job is to look at the housing needs in the community, specifically those that relate to affordable and or other needs. So what we have heard anecdotally from every agency in town is that the need is for senior housing, senior rental housing, independent senior rental housing. We've also heard, of course, the need for assisted living, but that's a tougher nut to crack, and we're going to stay away from that. So Fairbanks Neighborhood Housing and our board, we've been kind of talking about what we should develop. So we actually did a little bit of a market analysis. NeighborWorks America helped us with doing a little bit of market analysis. And I'm going to go through these slides. I only have four but or five, but I just want to point out that basically there's two interesting things. So we went to all the senior housing. And so the interesting thing is that what we found, obviously Raven Landing up there is that top at 95 units. That's on the higher end of the price. South Hall Manor's got 40 units. Of those properties up there that are designated senior or basically South Hall Manor, Golden Ages and Golden Towers, those are the ones that are senior housing that comes with a subsidy. So people basically pay 33% of their income, which is considered a reasonable amount of your income to spend on housing. So they're basically subsidized. The rest of those might be affordable, and there might be limits on who can go into them. This is kind of the range. And then, of course, we have but we basically got an inventory of everything that's accessible accessible or designated as our senior. The two, the interesting thing is that there's on some of these it's very varied. These properties, some of them have a wait list that's like years long, and then there's others that, like our property, we have our 10 units. What we have found is that seniors are not a very mobile population. What happens is that they rent, they either go into assisted living or they die. And then when you do have a vacancy in those, it's super hard to fill unless you have subsidized rent, unless there's that housing subsidy that goes along with the property. So that also goes through for Holiday Heights and North Pole and also MLH Manor. We did some demographic for an FYI. This someone mentioned earlier that the 2010 census was quite obviously 9 years away, and all the data in here is from the American Community Survey from 2017. So it's not 10-year-old data. It's American Community Service's survey is not as accurate as the census, but it fills the gap between census those every 10-year censuses And they're pretty good about telling you here's what the margin of – just like on a poll, they'll tell you what your margin of error is. Interestingly, downtown Fairbanks has the highest percentage of seniors age 65 and older. I think partly that's because you've got South Hall Manor, Golden Towers, et cetera. But the interesting thing is that's 2.5 times higher than the state average, which is 10.1%. Let's see. Estimated – I think it's important when you're talking about senior housing – is any project, the devil is in the details. It really is. The devil's in the details and whether it pencils out. But so we thought we should look at income as well for seniors for that same population that we're looking. And you can see here that there's some pretty low median household incomes. That light yellow is basically, I think, under – I don't have my glasses on, but I think that's under 30. And so that's an important component to understand the population that you're building for. So, for instance, if you look to the text on the side there, median household income is $29,000. For comparison, household income for the state of Alaska is $76,114. So what we find is there's a huge concentration of seniors, there's a need for housing, and the incomes tend to be lower in the downtown area. We also looked at poverty levels because I've, again, income, poverty, and I was actually kind of very surprised by this. In general, Fairbanks' rate of poverty for seniors is much higher than the state average of 5.1%. Ours is at 14.4%, which I find troubling for many reasons. conclusions. I want to just say one other thing. We looked at wait lists, everybody who has a wait list. And so when I mentioned the three properties, Golden Towers, Golden Ages, and Southall Manor, that have that Section 202 subsidy, those combined properties, I think, have roughly 200 units. As of May 31st, there was 502 active people on the wait list for those three properties, where the rest of us have a harder time filling it. So I don't think there's any – and that list has been that high forever and ever, but I find that – anyway, I guess what I'm kind of saying is that with the devil is in the details, but that for senior housing, it looks like that we really have to pay attention to income and affordability. Rate of poverty is higher for us, not good. And then demographics, but actually the demographics of seniors age 85 and older in the Fairbanks metro area, we call it downtown, has remained relatively steady. One thing to note, though, is that on the poverty level, because I was very curious about the differences between Native and non-Native, because we've been working with, of course, we've been talking to Dinakanaga, Fairbanks Native Association, TCC, about the needs for elder housing. And if you look at that little one right there, look at the level of seniors 65 or older below the poverty level. It's remained relatively flat for non-Natives, but has steadily risen since 2012. So we're kind of concluding there's a need for additional rental housing for seniors, and more specifically subsidized senior rental housing. And that's basically that. I would say one thing other Fairbanks Neighborhood Housing did in the context of the Polaris, Fairbanks, both of the downtown census districts and Fort Wainwright are in the Opportunity Zone. NeighborWorks America has a good real estate department, and so I applied for a $50,000 grant to look at Opportunity Zones in the context of the Polaris. We should find out if we get that here in the next week or two. Opportunity Zones are a potential source of equity. The thing with those, though, is that it's not going to support a pure housing, likely not. There has to be a commercial component. You're looking to get investors and to get a good return on their investment. So if you have a pure public purpose project, chances are opportunities aren't going to work. You're going to have something that makes some money. I frequently am fond of saying that mixed use isn't just commercial or commercial and residential. It's probably a mix of commercial, affordable, and market, just to get it to pencil out. And so with that enough said, I think the need for senior housing to go, if it works out for the Polaris, I think that's great. We're certainly willing to spend some time and energy to help with that. And if not, we'll just have to figure out another place to build it. Because I do think that that needs not going to way, going away, even though overall the vacancy rate in Fairbanks is pretty high. So,
any questions for Nadine? Renee.
Anything to say?
Yeah. Well, just what Nadine was talking about, there are a lot of opportunities for us since we are designated an opportunity zone. I just came back from the Neighborhood Works Training Institute in New Orleans, where I'm not on it. Okay.
Thank you.
Is that better? I just came back from Neighborhood Works Training Institute for Economic Development in New Orleans, and there are a lot of different grant possibilities, but to what Nadine was saying, it has to be a mixed use, and it's got to be a multi-tier approach. So one of the areas I went to, because the arts was interested in it, I attended what they did. They were able to get a grant to build a wonderful center in the middle of complete blight, really, and it's beautiful. It took up three blocks. And they built 29 low-income homes, single apartments above. And then below, they turned it into a community art center, which was really, it's a museum where all pieces are available for purchase. It wasn't just something to come in and take a look at. And they're actually able to fund that through memberships from the community. They also did a restaurant that was attached to it as well that helps youth in that area develop themselves into having actual a career by the time they're done. It's a 8-month training program. So they were able to do that with this funding. So it's kind of interesting watching, you know, with the new income tax credits that we were talking about before and different HUD loans and things like that, that it can be done. It's working in New Orleans. I was there after the flood. I rebuilt a project in Pensacola, Florida, and it was terrible. But they're starting to get back on track. And they're doing that with these multi-use projects. So just wanted to kind of add that in there as well.
Any questions for Renee? Jess.
Sorry. Well, Fairbanks Arts Association has been working in partnership with Explorer Fairbanks on this particular project for... Thank you, Helen. For quite some time, my involvement in the project began, I believe, in 2015, and that was already several years into conversations regarding a co-located convention center and performing arts center. So Helen really shared the bulk of our, joint findings for the co-located facilities. What I will add to that regarding the more recent shift in conversation from a performing arts center to more of a community arts center is that over the course of community conversations, we're, in Fairbanks, we appreciate versatility in our spaces. I think that is well exemplified in a number of buildings, that they're most successful when there are strong partnerships in place. And that there are many functions it can serve. And I think a great example of that is the building that Fairbanks Arts has inhabited for 53 years now, or 52 years, the Centennial Center for the Arts in Pioneer Park. So as a civic center with a gallery and an event space and the exhibit hall and art office and a theater, that space gets used by, every facet of the community all year round, and its future is uncertain, and we are very much looking forward to, at the Polaris site, there being a community art center that has a strong, versatile community functionality. So that's where we're really committed to putting our efforts, and we're looking forward to the possibility of, stronger partnership and multi-use facility in that.
Any questions for Jess?
Yes.
Yes.
You talk about the shift to community art-centered arts. What does that mean in the overall definition-wise?
Sure. So when I first got involved in this project, the conversation was really centered around a performing arts center. And so while, invariably there would be events other than performing arts there, it was really being studied with performing arts being the core function of that space. And so you saw with the ad alternates, trapdoors, large pit, and things like that. So I think a lot of it has to do with language. Community art center, making sure that there are a wider breadth of arts that are...
In like the main space is less of a dedicated auditorium?
Right. So we anticipate in the revised program arrangement there still being a performing arts space, but we want to make sure that it is it's going to be smaller. It's not going to have, the trap door and those things that are pretty cost prohibitive. And we want to make sure that it is, available for a broader use of functions than specifically performances.
Quick question for both of you.
Sure.
Is that why the Weybridge was added in as a second possibility between the two spaces? Is there an overflow ability to use this? What is the thinking in there about physically connecting them as an interior space?
So originally, we had wanted the buildings to be physically connected, but the fact that Noble Street is there, and that's a access for first responders and a community thoroughfare, there was some hesitation about actually building at street level. And so then there was talk about, putting a 15,000-square-foot ballroom kind of above Noble Street that kind of bridged that that space, and that's really expensive. So when the 15,000 square foot ballroom went away, we still wanted to be able to, if not immediately have that physical connection between the spaces, at least be planning for that physical connection. Even that small sky bridge came in at, what, $2.8 million. So we have the...
I have a screwed gun and some wood at home.
Right, yeah. No, somehow they don't like that. That apparently is not okay.
The Fairbanks way doesn't work.
Right, yeah, no. Especially if you're looking at grants and foundations and loans. So really it was the projects are connected in our planning and in our discussions and in our project, but the reality of physically connecting them, there were some challenges with that, especially at the get-go, like from the very beginning. So there's also discussion now with the change in the arts component that there could be the potential for shared space, for some multi-use space, and that potential sky bridge at some point could really benefit the ability to walk back and forth between the two programs. And, you know, for maybe the arts side to use some of the convention spaces and the convention side to use some of the art spaces.
Okay. That's what I was hoping.
So, yes, June.
I'll just make a comment. So the primary consideration in all of the discussions is to seek for the most versatile use of the building from both of you. That's what I'm hearing.
Yes, certainly for Fairbanks Arts Association's involvement in the project because, for over 50 years now, we've held all sorts of community functions in our spaces, and that's very important to us as an organization. So absolutely.
A couple things. Ed Carraway built the Civic Center and finished it in 1967, Fairbanks Construction. And he said it had a physical life of 30 years. So we're 22 years past that. What we're doing, what I wanted to show you tonight, was we are looking at projects that can either take up exactly where the Polaris building is, by knocking it down, we have to knock it down for us to do anything. Or we can have a project that incorporates all of Block 12, which is 35,000 square feet. Or we can have a project that incorporates Block 11, 65,000 square feet, and Block 12 of 35,000 square feet, and anything in between. We have different components of this working group doing different things. What I wanted to show you was Explore Fairbanks, what they're working on that are part of this downtown redevelopment. The Fairbanks Arts Association, Fairbanks Neighborhood Housing with the housing component. And then I grabbed Renee when she brought up the fact that she was looking at the Polaris site as a call center. Boom, there was our capitalist public-private investment scenario right there staring me in the face. Incorporated her into it. So it's a very, very good working group. But also I want to introduce some of the other people who are part of this working group. We have David Vandenberg over here with this Downtown Association. We have Deb Hickok over here with Explore Fairbanks. We have Jim Sackett here with the Governor's Office, State of Alaska. We have Rufus Bunch over here. He was a past engineer for the City of Fairbanks. And we were looking at the component of making the Polaris building a vertical garden. So we took Rufus's expertise, and he was one who made the determination it's most not likely that they can pump the CO2 over from the Aurora building to get that done. We have next to him Bucky Wright, who used to be with the Aurora Power Center there, but he's retired now, so we're working his rear end off quite well. We are putting him to work. And we have C.B. Bettysworth there. And CB's wife is one of those people who can look at me and tell me what I'm going to do. So therefore, CB gets to tell me what I'm going to do too. So we have a very, very good working group that is part of the best and the brightest that Fairbanks has to offer to get the Polaris building down and something redevelop it. Now, 1 year ago last June, the city of Fairbanks took ownership of the Polaris building. What was explained to you tonight was not one dime came out of the coffers of the city of Fairbanks. Some very, very good people that operate through the Polaris Working Group went out and raised the money to do it. To date, since ownership has arrived to the city of Fairbanks, we have not spent a single penny on that building. And we're looking if we have to expend any money on this Brownsfield grant, it will be through our work efforts. It'll be through our engineering department and our finance department administering to this contract. Any questions before we adjourn early? Mr. Mayor, it's back to you, sir.
No, oh, I have a
question. Oh, yes, Shoshana.
Sorry, in the corner over here. First of all, I want to thank all of the organizations that have come together with this. I am excited to hear the incorporation, the mixed use, both on the arts level but also on the living scale. Since we're dreaming, dream big. I love the idea of the two buildings being tied together. It really gives accessibility to those that might not. Provides exercise for senior. It gives a place where, I can just see buildings that we have in other countries kind of thing to come here. So I really thank you all for coming together to brainstorm this. And the time, Councilmember Prus and Rogers, I want to thank you for putting that time in and not costing any more than $36,000 and change. 67 cents is all I remember, Helen. So I appreciate that. That is something that comes up a lot in my conversations with constituents. The concern is, how are we going to afford to pull this down? So I look forward to future conversations with that, but I want to thank you all for coming together, and I look forward to continued conversation. So I love the mixed-use idea. And yes, it's time. So thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
I want to thank the presenters here tonight. Thank you very much. Thank you.